at the moment, I tend to think the U.S. is actually beginning to catch up with the third world. I mean, if you go to Russia, you go to India, you go to Brazil, you go to, you know, the downtown Sao Paulo market area that's the equivalent of like Canal Street, you'll see, you know, CDs by the, you know, the dozens that don't, they have every, not just every, you know, song on one album, but every album the artist has ever made on an MP3 file just sitting on the, you know, for 50 cents. If you go to China, it's even worse. I mean, they're, the issue is that copyright law in those cultures is part of basically the fabric of something that they don't even deal with. They're just kind of like, okay, we're all, you know, burning DVDs, CDs, you name it. You go down to Chinatown here, that's a little bubble of what's going on in the rest of the world. The bootleg culture kind of issues are much more prevalent pretty much everywhere else. The U.S., the consumers actually still believe in actually paying for things, which is interesting in its own right, to see how much we're conditioned by the...
And one last comment from Hank, and we'll bring...
And one of the things that I've noticed, you know, going around is the fact that I think there's a big... I think that we, like, there used to be a thing called a generation gap that we had in our cultural society. You know, well, I think that we're having another one. And I think that what's starting to happen is that you're getting a lot of artists are like saying, fuck the system and fuck everybody who thinks that they're going to stop me from doing what I want to do. I'm going to sample. I'm going to collaborate. I'm going to do anything that I'm going to do. So there's a whole underworld of artists who are just getting together doing whatever. They're taking music, they're taking records, they're taking art, they're taking everything, and they're collaging this stuff together because now we're moving into what is known as a multimedia zone. So now what was happening on the record front is now starting to happen on the visual front. So now you got the records are sampling and the video people are stealing pieces from television and movies and all kinds of stuff, and they're putting these things together in incredibly clever ways. So what's happening, you know, is everybody thinks that the art is being stagnated, you're wrong. You're wrong. And if you think that that the situation is going to change, where the kids are going to like all of a sudden conform to your old beliefs, that if you sample or if you take something, it's against the law, you're wrong. Because all that's going to happen is these cats are going to find new ways and new inventive ways of getting their stuff across, and they're going to find ways of getting to the marketplace, a la Danger Mouse, who took the Beatles catalog, which is the sacred holy grail of music sampling, and put it together with Jay-Z on top of it and gave it away on the internet. And this kid has a career right now that's bigger than everybody on the planet right now. So it doesn't really matter. Your old beliefs are going to die off like the dinosaurs did in the back of the days.
And on that note, let's thank the panel, and we'll bring up Lawrence Lessig.
So Judge Kaczynski is much smarter than I am because he sets it up so I'm the one that stands between you and lunch, and now I'm the one that stands between you and drinking. And so I'm going to try to be brief, but it really follows directly from, is your name Larry or what's your name? From what Hank was just saying, what's so puzzling to me about all of this is how seriously people take the law. But now I'm not saying... I'm not saying, a la Hank, that you should break the law or ignore the law. I mean, it's very serious if you break the law and ignore the law. But I am saying that it's puzzling that people treat the law as if it's something written on stone tablets by a guy who says he spoke to God, right? As opposed to something that gets radically changed over time in response to new technologies that demand new laws, right? So we listen, you've been listening to the kind of apologetics from lawyers for the last day now. And has anybody been convinced that there's deep seriousness and deep wisdom in the particular ways in which we set up the law? For example, Hank says, how do you know who owns the stuff that you're sampling? Let me tell you about a case that hasn't been mentioned so far. There's a company, fantastic company called Naxos Records, which restores old classical recordings. And they restored a bunch of old classical recordings from the 1930s, which were in the public domain in England. EMI, the successor in interest to the company that made those recordings in England, came to New York and filed a lawsuit that said, even though these were in the public domain in England, they're not in the public domain in New York. The highest court of New York, the Court of Appeals of New York, April 5th last year, issued a ruling that says, you're right, common law of New York protects all recordings made before 1972, regardless of where they were made, perpetually, or until federal law kicks in, meaning until 2067, every recording ever made in the history of man is protected by common law copyright in the state of New York. Now, I understand how I go back and find out who the owners of recordings from the 1930s made, you know, by the earlier company of EMI or Capitol Records were, but how do you find the owners of all of these recordings whom, if you take and even just restore for the purpose of an archive, now you're potentially committing copyright infringement unless you've cleared permission from the owners who could never be found. Now the point is, this is just a system that's been driven by a particular narrow set of interests that has nothing to do with the wider range of interests that culture demands we pay attention to, like preservation or archiving or our past or history or the opportunity for people to make reference to our history. All of that was off the table of those judges bench when they sat there and they thought, yes, EMI can control these recordings until 2067. Or I think yesterday I was talking about 6,000 films entered into Sundance. Only 24 get rights cleared so they can be distributed in any form at all outside of the context of these festivals, right? 24. Why? Because the system for licensing music is insanely complicated and expensive. So we stopped the distribution of 6,000 films that could be distributed by DVD or the internet or peer-to-peer file sharing. For what reason? What reason is there? It's just a broken system, right? And the same thing with sampling. Like, you're giving away too much in this idea, oh, yeah, you want to pay for every note. Bullshit. Why should you be paying for every note in what you're sampling in this context? You should be, as Marjorie was saying, demanding that fair use protects your right to be engaging in this kind of creativity. And if it's not fair use, then give us a simple system where you can just pay in the way you'd pay for a cover album. You can just pay a simple way to have the right to create. The point is, copyright is about creating incentives for people to create. And all of you know all of these ways in which copyright is blocking the opportunity for people to create. And the simple way you fix that is to change the goddamn law, right? You just change the law. Now, you can say ignore it. And, you know, I'm the boring law professor. It makes me deeply sad to imagine a whole generation of people growing up and say, to hell with the law, I don't care about the law. And maybe that's the way it's going to be. And when it's like that, then this civilization will really tank, right? You know, maybe that's a good thing, too. A lot of people think so. But my job is about saying, there's no reason the law has to be insane. The law can be sane. It is in lots of places sane. All it takes is that more people like you demand that the law change. This debate is controlled by lawyers, by lobbyists, and by Lessigs, right? Idiot activists like me, right? That's the last people that ought to be involved in this debate. It's artists, it's you. It's people like you going and saying, the system is not making sense for artists. That's what the system was made for, to protect artists. So change the system so it protects artists again. You can do that. And if you do, eventually they'll get around to changing the system. But that's what we should be fighting for making the system make sense, by not taking seriously the guys who have investments in the ways of making music in the 1960s, by not taking them seriously, and instead taking seriously you, your creativity, and what the system ought to do to make your creativity legal. So let's go drink.
Thank you, all of you. Lawrence Lessig will not be here tomorrow, but he is the founder of this whole conference and certainly the spirit behind it, and I think he deserves another round of applause.
Thank you so much.
As for the rest of you, we're going to have some really exciting things tomorrow. The first panel is Jonathan Lethem and Lewis Hyde, who've been invoked. Both of them will be talking, and then a final panel, What Is to Be Done. We start at 9:30 tomorrow. Books over there if you want to sign up for other conferences by the Institute over there. Thank you all.
Brought you here and into my power. attack on the 20th century.